previously broadcast program.
I can do what I want. I'm a big girl. That's my pussy. I can do what I want. I'm a big girl.
You are tuned in to CKUT 90.3 FM on Underground Sounds. It is 10 past 8. I am your host and voice from the beyond, Jean-Néon Johnny Void. This is Les Transmissions du Vide. If you're wondering about what you've been hearing for the last 10 minutes, that is a live recording of Leon Lauder and Scattered Ensemble, live at La Soteneria on October 29th, 2022. It was a CKUT co-presentation show for Laurie Goldston and Craig Kelly. I am in studio with Leon Lauder, not the Scattered Ensemble, but Leon solo. We are presenting a show at La Lumière Collective on January 11th.
14th.
Oh, 14th, sorry. I'm at another show at La Lumière. There's another show at La Lumière on January 11th. It's cool, come to that. But no, ours is on the 14th. Leon Lauder and Scattered Ensemble will be launching officially their album Habitat, which we'll be talking about in a few. I will also be performing with Maya Kuroki on the occasion of our 12-inch EP, Age. And I'm also presenting my tape, Breeds, which is for the Italian label TSSSS, a sort of remix of sorts of their 29 first releases. So it's a triple launch album, La Lumière Collective, which is at 7080 Rue Alexandra on the 14th. And today we have Leon in studio for an interview.
Hey.
Hi, Leon. And for our first hour, we'll be talking about this album, Habitat, that they're presenting and the inspirations. Leon will be playing some songs and artists that have inspired the aleatoric process of this album, and in the second hour I will be joined by Maya Kuroki and we will do a live in studio session to give you a mise en bouche of what's coming up this Saturday. Hello Leon.
Hello.
So you're presenting this album Habitat that you released in June last year. The show in October was your live premiere, I believe.
Yes.
And so now you get to officially do a show. I was going to say post-pandemic. We're not post-pandemic.
Right.
It's still going on, but at least we can do shows now, which makes this a better occasion to present this album.
Yeah, it feels like a celebration and a miracle to do any kinds of shows, but especially when you've got people coming in from other places and getting together an entire group is pretty... well, for a long time, it didn't feel like it would ever be possible, and so now it is.
And so it is. So you are playing with your Scattered Ensemble. Can you introduce the Scattered Ensemble? And
so sure. Like the name Scattered is no accident, in the sense that it's kind of a selection of people from different yet similar musical backgrounds, and people who are scattered geographically, at least in terms of Rodney, who's the double bass player, lives 3 hours away in Kingston, Ontario, and you know a lot. And Gabriel Godbout lives in Montreal, as does Martin Rodriguez, although he travels a lot. Samuel Bobigny as well, sort of is on tour a lot. So yeah, the Scattered Ensemble is a group of people who are somewhat scattered around, but come together for this project.
Before you said geographically, I thought that's not a nice thing to say about people, that they're scattered, scatterbrained people.
Well, no. Scatterbrained, I mean, I was certainly in preparing for the show, I was a little scared someone would say that we were the scatterbrained ensemble, but, you know, that forced us to practice.
Speaking of practice, so this album was recorded and being performed at La Lumière Collective, which, if you don't know La Lumière Collective, it is a micro cinema collective studio space in the so-called Milex, which
the Alexandra Marconi district.
Yeah. And yeah, can you tell us how this happened during pandemic and the sort of process, because you recorded but then sort of assembled and deconstructed, reconstructed recordings?
Sure. Well, so it all sort of started at home, and kind of the embryonic idea was I initially wanted, you know, my working title for the album was Gardens, because during that really dark early lockdown period, you know, I was kind of cooped up in the house with a 2-year-old kid, and you know, kind of, we were all going a little bit crazy, but it was also sort of weird and beautiful in its own way. You know, just the sound of a two-year-old knocking things off of tables, you know, pots and pans. It was the age where, you know, a little kid bangs on pots and pans all the time, and it's like dropping cups on the floor. And so all those kinds, that was sort of the soundtrack to life, is just accidental sounds and sort of chaotic sounds. I had a little radio going all the time, which I was sort of compulsively flicking from AM station to AM station, listening to very apocalyptic sounding broadcasts from all over the world talking about the pandemic and the surreal kind of political situations around the world. And through that, I sort of said, well, what kind of music could I make out of this environment? Because I'm one of those poor unfortunates that has to make music all the time, to the detriment of everyone around me. So I started collecting little sounds, you know, little things falling, little plonks, little plinks. I heard my son kind of tapping on the high piano keys, and the sort of randomness of the sound I found really interesting. So I started recording myself, dropping a coin on a guitar string and letting it roll down, and, you know, tapping wine glasses together and whatever else, whatever I could do around the house, in that lockdown. And I sort of started collecting those sounds. And then, I mean, it doesn't sound particularly dramatic to say that, you know, the inspiration for this album came from lying in bed and listening to music on YouTube, but that's the reality of it is I started listening to things that I had never checked out before, and one of them was the work of Morton Feldman, who is a composer, you know, contemporary and friend of John Cage, who has these incredibly long string quartets, which, you know, I thought about playing one of them here on the air, and it's almost like you kind of have to be in it for an hour before, you know, it's not that conducive to just, hey, here's a snippet of that. But I found the randomness of it quite comforting, and so I don't know if I'm rambling too much or if I finished answering the question.
No, it's just I was going to point out that there's a line I really like in what you wrote about the album, that they ask the listener to live in the music as much as to listen to it, accepting this discord as equal to harmony, chaos is part of the order. And I felt like that related to what you were explaining about Morton Feldman, that you have to go through that chaos and that build-up to actually get the more cohesive sections. And
But also built into the chaos is a very profound sense of peace. And once again, like, I would separate it from relaxation music. It's something else. It doesn't relax your mind. There's another album that really, over the last 5 to 6 years, has kind of informed everything I do, and it's a soundtrack to a ballet from the 80s by Ryuichi Sakamoto called Esperanto. And it has the same effect on me, where there's a lot of call and response and a lot of strange sounds and a lot of actually surprises and sudden things coming out of nowhere, but the overall effect is, you know, a sense of wonder and a kind of profound, well, for me anyway, relaxation, actually. So I was in those dissonances and in those surprises, I kind of found something, comforting. So anyway, as the pandemic progressed, you know, daycare opened up again, and I was able to go back to my studio.
I like that also your two-year-old son is sort of part of the scattered ensemble in a way.
In a big way, yeah.
He's the conductor.
Yeah, because that's also something that happens when you become a parent, is that you have to accustom yourself to constantly never being able to really plan stuff, because the rug is always being pulled out from under you in one way or another, and the pandemic really exacerbated that. So yeah, just kind of finding, accepting that craziness. This idea of a garden, as the winter moved into summer and spent a lot of time just looking at overgrown plants. I think the city was kind of neglecting those patches of grass around the trees, and they were getting really overgrown. And then as we sort of moved into the really turbulent craziness of 2020, we left town and we were in the estuary of the St. Lawrence, and once again, this is a very, you know, it's a place where the saltwater environment meets the freshwater environment, and there's a really intense ecosystem, and that once again felt like being enveloped. I mean, where we were actually staying is a tiny cabin with, barely running water, and you're just in the midst of it. You know, the birds and the seals and the bugs and the water, and storms kind of move in and just sort of inhale you. Just sort of, I found something in that to inspire this music. Anyways, long story short, I was at La Lumière. I'd been there since 2017 with a few different studio mates, and during this period it was just me and Benjamin, who is actually doing visuals for the show, kind of scratching our heads about what do we do creatively during this period. And so I showed him some of the early material, and I said, would you be interested in doing visuals for the music? And he said, well, I've never done that before. And I said, well, you got any other plans? And so I started tinkering more and more with just collecting these kinds of sounds. I made an instrument on my balcony one day, a sort of rudimentary box with strings on it, and kind of thought I would end up developing it, but I kind of liked it the way it was, and sort of built a weird xylophone with wrenches. And so I just kept exploring and collecting sounds and gradually building these structures out of them.
Speaking of instruments, so I wanted to precise, so you play your homemade instruments, you play piano, you do the sampler sequencer, and then in your band you also have Ronnie Softman, who's playing double bass, Xylem. What is Xylem?
I don't know. Hallam. It's pronounced Hallam. Hallam. And it's a small stringed instrument. You'll see it in the Middle East and Africa. It's quite difficult to tune because of the way it's built. It sort of looks like a cousin of the banjo, probably an ancestor of the banjo, I guess. I mean, in a broad sense, although it has a very warm, soft, as opposed to a tinny tone, it has a very like mellow tone. So yeah, he had built one of those, and we had been collaborating. We, once again, this you know, the pandemic made me want to reach out to people, we connected over email and then started sending each other bits of music that we'd been working on. And of course he works with samplers as well, and he'd been playing classical double bass, which kind of blew my mind, because when we met in our 20s he was doing reggae and funk and hip hop, and suddenly he's playing in the orchestra. So I'm going, well, what could we do with the double bass? And so that grew out from there. And then there's a lot of interesting little stories. Gabrielle, I had performed alongside her at an event right before, literally like 3 weeks before the pandemic hit. It feels like it was 3 weeks. And we had performed with different bands and collaborators at a few events, but we'd never actually spoken. And so she was playing right before me, and I was really interested in the sounds she was playing back through her sampler. A lot of little mallet sounds and little piano lines, very kind of sparkly, and yet with a lot of aggressive undertones and overtones. And I found it really neat and unpredictable, so I struck up a conversation with her. And somehow we got onto the topic of just loving and being kind of obsessed with mallet instruments and bells and such. And then she had mentioned playing the vibraphone at a studio, and somehow I got in my head that she had a vibraphone. So I wrote to her and I said, I'd like to have vibraphone on these recordings. And she said, oh, well, I can find one for us. And I said, oh, so you don't play it? And she's like, no, but I know someone who has one. And I said, well, why don't let's do that. And so that's how that happened, right?
And then the next one is Martin Rodriguez, who, I mean, you mentioned you were inspired by radio that was, like, playing at your place. And Martin Rodriguez is a radio sound artist, also Cymbal and Modulus on the album.
So Martin and I used to have a band. I mean, we were just the two of us playing very, very raw, noisy, free improv electronic music. So we were called Data Slum, and that, you know, being in that group with him was kind of my intro to this crazy world of DIY experimental music in Montreal, and we would go and play, and it was totally terrifying because our modus operandi was we don't plan, we plug in like 15 machines each and just start screeching away. And it was always really, really fun and often really terrifying because everything can go wrong. And so we had sort of put that project aside, and he'd gotten really into radios. But initially when I contacted him, I knew him as a guitarist before, so I thought maybe he would play guitar. But he sort of was like, nope.
The radio is his new
guitar. Yeah, the radio is his new guitar. So I brought him on board, and once again, all of these parts, other parts to the skeletons I created were recorded remotely. Sometimes, with Gabriel, we went and recorded together, but I never had everyone in the same room. I had contacted Samuel Bobigny, also known as Black Givre, who also played at a lot of those events that Martine and I had played at. And I was always really interested in his practice, what he was doing with drums and electronics. And I just reached out to him and said, this was even before the project had taken form. I had these sketches, and I said, would you like to play on my weird sketches? And he got very involved and really wanted to know what I was looking for, and I was sort of like, well, I don't really know. Just go crazy. And I had him work on one track, and then I took what he'd done and sort of regurgitated it and chopped it up and sent it back to him, and then he sent it back to me, and it was... And so, the rest is history.
I'm wondering if Martin ever samples a CKUT 90.3 FM when he plays live, because I certainly have whenever I've had a radio in my set. It's kind of my... if I don't know where I'm going mm-hmm. with what I'm playing, I just go to 90.3 FM, and I'm like, there has to be something I can
There'll be something this. Useful there, yeah. Some interesting textures, for sure.
Mm. Okay, so you've also bought some records for us to play, Sonic Inspirations for the album.
Yeah, sure. Okay, well, I brought a few things. Just sort of an obvious one is... Olivier Messiaen, that's how you pronounce it, right? Yes, good, I did it. And a piece called Seven Haikai, which are basically, him trying to mimic bird sounds and using the orchestra and various bells. And that was a record that I first heard as a teenager. My mother actually stuck it in my hand and said, you have to listen to this. I found it unlistenable, and most of it I still find quite hard to listen to because the harmonies are so dense, but it's, and because to me it doesn't really sound like birds, and when I talk about that peaceful quality that, say, I in the Feldman stuff, or, this to me doesn't have that relaxing effect, but yet is so sonically rich and just so neat to listen to that I thought I would play a little excerpt from it, so.
So here we go, Olivier Messiaen.
So I think we figured out the turntable situation.
We figured out the turntables, but it was the wrong record, so we're just taking a little moment to put the right record. Ooh, here we go.
Okay, the stop button. Yeah, I see. Here we go.
It's Leon's first time in the studio since a long time ago, so apologies for technical difficulties. Thank you. and you are still listening to the CKUT 90.3 Underground Sounds with my first guest of this evening, Leon Lauder, who played us two inspirations for the album Habitat, launching at La Lumière Collective this January 14th. So yeah, we had Olivier Messiaen in the first part, and then followed by Patrick Bastien.
Pierre
Bastien. Yeah, I messed that up. If you could tell us about these inspirations and how they relate to your album and process.
Well, so yeah, the Messiaen stuff really is, you know, impressionism is very clearly trying to sound like a natural sound, like birds. And so that, as I said, you know, it's in a way quite hard to listen to, but so rich and interesting that, it's very inspiring. And then Pierre Bastien, well, this, what I actually played is not, strictly speaking, an inspiration for the album, as it actually came out after the album. It's his new record, but I was playing a show outside during the pandemic, the only show I played during the pandemic, in a park, and someone came up to me after the show and said, "Oh, wow, the little percussive sounds that you're using are so cool, and you have to check out Pierre Bastien." I said, "Who? I don't know who that is." So he said, "Well, it's this composer who makes music out of, he makes machine, like mechanical machines, and then runs them." And I said, "Wow." And so anyway, this is his new stuff. I have no idea exactly how it's put together, but I know that a big part of what he does is to make these kind of mechanisms, and then those mechanisms become kind of like his orchestra, so sort of like mechanical robots that make music.
And that reminds me of a Montreal composer, Anne-Eve Jacques. I don't know if you've ever seen
her. Well, I did see her do one thing, I think. Yeah.
Which is kind of the same thing. She has these little like constructions she's made and just lets them run, and that's her set, basically. Yeah.
So it's that that philosophy of letting things happen by themselves that kind of really informed, as opposed to something like Messiaen, where the every note is written out specifically, or something like aleatoric composition, where what pitch is played is left up to the discretion of the players. In this case, it's up to the discretion of mechanisms. So I'm interested in all those kinds of things.
It's like proto AI music, I guess.
Well, I like the rudimentariness of it. There's something perverse for me, perversely fun in the age of all this AI and machine learning and hyper complex technological stuff to do things that are rudimentary and that involve acoustics more, and that involve kind of human error and human creativity. You know, I'm not against generative music. It can be wonderful, but there's a distinction to be made anyway.
There's no physicality to it in the way that this has.
Right, that's true. Yeah, it's a question of that. Yeah, and when I started trying to figure out how I could sample stuff live and have it start morphing and changing in a somewhat random way as it was being sampled, and sort of do random stuff to the sound as it was being sampled and played back, I got a vague impression, like it sounds pretty grandiose to say this, but of actually the electronic instrument, the sampler, sort of being an extension of my body in a way that it didn't feel like it was before.
This is with the Octatrack?
Yes, Octatrack, the Octatrack.
Which does seem to have many settings for randomness on it. So
yeah, there's many ways. There's many ways to have it surprise you. And yeah. I mean, it also has frustrating limitations, but once again, that's also something that's kind of nice. I mean, I could have decided to bring more software, more sophistication to this project. But at the end of the day, what became really rewarding was working with the musicians and realizing that we could actually just play most of the stuff, right? And not rely too much on the machines to play for us. So.
Will you play us a next track?
A next track?
Yeah.
From there. Oh yeah, let's definitely play some of the Sakamoto.
Perfect.
The album is called Esperanto. It's from the 80s. It's the soundtrack to a ballet. It's kind of hard to find. geez, they're all so good. I don't know which one I want to play. Maybe all of them. Start with A Carved Stone.
Perfect. So, A Carved Stone by Ryuichi Sakamoto from Esperanto, which, surprisingly, I have not heard this album out of all the Sakamoto I've listened to. So here's A Carved Stone. Thank you. Oh, and that was two songs by Ryuichi Sakamoto from the soundtrack of Esperanto, chosen by Leon Lauder in studio with us. And what can you tell us about the Esperanto soundtrack?
So, okay, well, I don't want to drone on about how ahead of its time something is, but yeah, knowing that that was made in the 80s and that those are mostly sampled sounds, and you can hear that they have a kind of low fidelity quality to them, which is probably, you know, just limitations. So whereas you and I can scroll through enormous banks of sounds and just have 1,000 samples at our fingertips, back then, even being a like famous composer, you still probably had tremendous limitations in terms of how many sounds you could use. And so he's made something out of seemingly random bits, but you can tell he didn't have that many to work with and couldn't work with that many at once. And what strikes me the most about it is how well chosen they all are and how much sense he makes them make with each other, almost like a poetic sense. And like, so when I listen to it, there is just a sense of total, almost like peace and a sort of dreaminess and a sort of, yeah, sense of amazement just at how this little puzzle is fitting together in front of my ears.
And so the next track you want to play, you said, is an artist you don't really know about,
yeah,
but you're fascinated by this song.
This is a random find. It's two women named, and this is going to be hard for me, Angarat
Davis and Tisha Mukherjee.
So I have no way of really knowing how to pronounce their names, but this is something I found on a label I now forget the name of, putting out odd classical, modern classical, contemporary music in England, and they are playing violin and prepared piano, and as far as I understand, there is no electronics whatsoever going on in this, which kind of is, or multi-tracking. I think this is just all live. I don't know how it's possible, but anyways, play it and you'll tell me. So, yeah, it's quite chaotic to listen to, but once again, it has a quality that is not unpleasant.
So this is Fancy Free by Angarat Davis and Tisha Mukherjee. Yeah, I can see it now. I think in my eyes, the I and the J were inverted.
Nice.
Here we go.
Thank you.